Welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and I'm delighted to have you with me today. And today we have Robin Martinez with us from Colorado. Hi, Robin. How are you doing?
Great, Joyce. How are you?
I'm doing great. And we have a special guest with us today to talk about ALD, and I'm probably not going to remember how to pronounce it correctly, so we'll ask Kathleen to pronounce it properly. This is Kathleen O'Sullivan Fortin, whom I met at a wonderful seminar the other day, patient empowerment seminar. And so welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you, Joyce. I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. So, Kathleen, would you tell us a little bit about ALD Connect and maybe start with your own journey of how you achieved the diagnosis for your son?
Sure. Well, I have three kids, two girls and a boy. And, you know, when they were young, when they were very little, it seemed that everything was going well and there were no concerns in the world. And then one day when my son was about 5 1/2, it was Christmas time here in New England, and he was running around the house with the rest of my kids. And I took he caught my eye, and I took a hard look at him, and I thought, gosh, he's really tan. And it makes no sense because we're pretty pale people and it was winter and we hadn't traveled anywhere. But, you know, I kind of pulled him closer to me and I looked and he had no tan line. So he was just, his entire body was tan off season. And I thought, that's very strange. So I looked it up online, like everyone, and I started doing some investigating. And one of the conditions that popped up was adrenal dysfunction and Addison's disease. And so I looked up the rest of the symptoms, and some of them were, is he a salt seeker? Well, yes, he was always the kid eating pretzels, you know, trying to munch on something super salty. And he had low energy and low muscle tone. And we also have a family history of Addison's disease. I have an older sister with Addison's disease. And so I thought, gee, maybe he does, you know, somehow it's missed me, but he will have adrenal dysfunction. So I called my dad, and I'm blessed because my father is, now he's a retired neurologist, but he practiced for over 42 years. So I called him and I said, you know, this is what I've looked up on the internet. This is what I noticed. What do you think? And he said, oh, great catch, yes, go to his pediatrician. And so, you know, long story short, we went to the pediatrician, we were sent to the endocrinologist, and yes, indeed, he did have adrenal dysfunction. And so it was a simple treatment. They could treat him with prescription cortisone. And within a week or so, he went from being kind of an Eeyore to a Tigger. You know, he had always kind of been a very calm, quiet boy, which, of course, I had attributed to my fantastic parenting. And lo and behold, no, that was not his nature. That was his adrenal dysfunction. So once he got a whiff of cortisone, you know, all of a sudden I had someone who wanted to jump and climb and play. And, you know, he had been in kindergarten, and we kind of were trying to figure out if we should evaluate him for learning disabilities. He just didn't seem to be catching on. Well, once he got his cortisone, you know, he could read within 2 weeks. The school said it's like a light switch has been turned on. It's a different boy. So we thought, how fabulous, you know, John 2.0, what a gift. And so a few weeks later, we got a call from the endocrinologist, and she said, and I, you know, of course, said, oh, thank you so much for the cortisone. John is just, you know, he's just an even better version of himself. It's delightful. And they said, well, that's great to hear. Would you mind coming in this afternoon? I've cleared my schedule at 5. If you would come with your husband and leave your children at home, and then if you would clear tomorrow morning for another appointment. And I said, oh, that doesn't sound good. And they said, no, we don't want to scare you. We don't want to get, you know, I don't want to tell you anything. Just come and let us talk about it. And I said, well, you know, just give me a hint. You know, it's going to kill me waiting for this all day. So she said, we did some blood work, and his very long chain fatty acid levels are elevated. So, you know, I urge you not to look into this. Just wait and come till we can explain this to you. And so I thought, well, that must be horrible. So I said, thanks so much, see you then, hung up and called my dad because it's, you know, very convenient to have a pocket neurologist when you need one. And so I said, Dad, you know, John's VL, very long-chain fatty acids are short-termed for VLCFAs. John's VLCFAs are elevated. What does that mean? And he said, that's a death sentence. Force them to retest. And I said, okay. What do you mean? And so he said, that's adrenoleukodystrophy or ALD. And I had no idea what the disease was. We started immediately looking it up and didn't like what we saw, but at least we knew what we were facing when we went in. So we went in that evening, and the doctor said, yes, indeed, has, you know, confirmed that the diagnosis was adrenoleukodystrophy or ALD, and that it's most dangerous to boys who get ALD between, and really the worst times are between the ages of 4 and 10. But basically, adrenoleukodystrophy is an X-linked genetic defect that affects the ABCD1 gene. And so it's passed on. Usually to boys, it's passed on from their mother, and girls can get it from their mother, and girls can get it from their father because of the X-link. Mm-hmm. But because boys only have one X chromosome, if they get mom's defective gene, they have ALD. So adrenoleukodystrophy has many symptoms. It can start with the TAM, like John had, or it can also, you know, many people know ALD from the movie Lorenzo's Oil from 1990, where poor Lorenzo, you know, started to have some clumsiness, some vision issues, some behavior issues. Unfortunately, many boys are misdiagnosed either as ADHD or sent just to get glasses, and then kind of the symptoms get progressively worse, and when they can't fix it with simple, you know, behavior modification or glasses, then they really start to look into it, and they may end up with additional signs of adrenal dysfunction beyond the TAN with, you know, seizures or adrenal crisis. And so we were very lucky to find that my son had it at this early stage. Once you know you have ALD, if all those symptoms that I just described are really symptoms of brain damage. So what happens is when your very long-chain fatty acid levels are elevated, it's the result of metabolic dysfunction, a peroxisomal dysfunction. And so what happens is these very long-chain fatty acids shouldn't be in your body but are because of your ALD, and they end up kind of floating around and landing on the covering of your brain, and then eventually, in the deadliest times, your brain starts to try and rid itself of this product, and at the same time, it rips the cover off your brain. So once that demyelination of your brain begins, it's very challenging to stop. And unfortunately, those symptoms that I referenced are an indicator of the brain damage. So the brain damage precedes the symptom. So by the time you can catch those real obvious symptoms of behavior and vision and gait issues and clumsiness, in many instances, it's too far gone to help. So at present, there are no preventive measures for ALD. If you're found to have early cerebral disease, you may be a good candidate for a bone marrow transplant or a cord blood transplant, or right now the gene therapy is in the works through Bluebird Bio and Cambridge Mass, and they're doing the Starbeam study in case people are interested in looking that up. But, you know, it is found that these procedures can halt the progression of the disease, but only, you know, you're only eligible for that treatment once you've shown signs of obvious cerebral demyelination, which is irreparable. So
yeah,
it can't fix. Sure.
Let's go back and make sure that everybody understands. First of all, and as you said, the early diagnosis is one of the keys to controlling this at all. The earlier we catch it, the more likely we can at least slow everything down. But
oh, for sure.
But early diagnosis is difficult with this situation because the symptoms don't really begin until the damage is already underway. So, first of all, people need to be aware of any family history, right? So,
of
what
course.
Kind of family history hints might they look for?
Sure. You know, for us, I looked our family history. You know, I have one sister, and yes, she had adrenal dysfunction, but we didn't realize that that was actually a symptom of her own ALD and being a carrier. I didn't have any signs of any kind of neurological impairment, so I wouldn't have known. I didn't notice that my mother had any signs, but my mother's brother in 1955 died kind of mysteriously just after he graduated from high school at age 17. At the time, I'm pretty sure they said it was pneumonia or, you know, I'm pretty sure if they didn't know what anything was at that point, they just always said pneumonia. But it appears that, you know, after my mom, who had, you know, raised my sister periodically going into adrenal crisis, my mom said that, you know, his symptoms that kind of ushered him out were very, very identical to the symptoms of adrenal dysfunction and crisis. And so...
Right.
Then we went back and looked at the black and white pictures of my uncle, and in the last 2 years before he died, he got dark, and he was the strange tan boy, and he got clumsy, and he needed glasses. And so the thought is that perhaps he actually died of ALD, and that just went undiagnosed.
Right. So families where the women have Addison's disease, probably would it be advisable to do some DNA testing to try to determine whether it's garden variety Addison's disease or whether, in fact, there's more to the story?
Sure. I would say for sure families where there are males with Addison's, I would definitely look into it. My sister tends to be a kind of a rare situation. There are not In my experience, I haven't found many women with Addison's in our community. That being said, a lot of families will go along many generations thinking they have a history of MS or thinking they have a history of some other kind of related neurodegenerative disease, only to later find out upon genomic sequencing that it is actually ALD. So because I've spoken to ALD as kind of a childhood cerebral ALD, and then there's kind of a more adult form, which is called AMN. And basically, that's when instead of the body attacking the covering of the brain and demyelinating, that neurodegeneration happens on the spinal cord. And so adult symptoms of AMN are gait issues, urinary incontinence issues, clumsiness, numbness, kind of any kind of long axonal neurodegenerative effect. And so people with that in their family may want to consider that it comes from a different place. And it can be easily confirmed. You know, one thing, a kind of new advance, is there is a newborn screening test available. And at present, it is only tested for in 4 states in the country. On December 31st, 2014, Aiden's Law in New York State enabled New York State to become the first state in the country to test for ALD. And on the same blood spot where they test for many other diseases, for just about $2.50 a child, they can tell definitively if they have ALD or a related peroxisomal disorder. So I know in the 2 years since they've done it in New York State, there have been no false positives. They've found over 20 boys with ALD and, you know, found their siblings. You know, once you test a baby, then it's kind of like the tip of the iceberg, because then it enables the family to test the other siblings, to test the females, cousins, etc., to really, you know, give everyone the best chance at treatment. Because we're lucky because we found my son with this tan, and now, you know, I'm blessed to say that 6 years later, he still has no cerebral involvement, and so we're in a position to try Lorenzo's oil and to get MRIs twice a year and to wait. We're basically in a wait-and-see holding pattern, much like the newborn screening moms, because we've got all our ducks in a row for once the cerebral damage begins, if that's to be his path. But we're super lucky to have the chance to try and wait and hope that science can catch up and get in front of the disease so that he doesn't have to endure, you know, lifelong impairment or death at the hands of this terrible disorder.
So when you get a diagnosis like this, first of all, you have to take a deep breath. And then I know that you said that you did a lot of research and actually walked into the doctor's office with a list of questions.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because I think it's an interesting story about being an empowered patient and and creating the right relationship with your doctors when you do that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, so, you know, you go back to that day, we met with the endocrinologist, and she gave us a diagnosis and gave us a couple articles to read and said, you know, please, you know, we're so fortunate because we're here in Boston. You know, one of the leading, just by chance, one of the leading experts in childhood cerebral ALD, Dr. Florian Eichler, is here at Mass General. So they had already gone ahead and made an appointment with us for the very next morning in his clinic to go and bring John and have him evaluated and get him on the path to, you know, treatment. And so we went home and, you know, cried and tried to catch our breath. And then we just started researching ALD and what treatments are out there. And, you know, since I'd gotten off the phone earlier in the day with my father, he had been all over the internet pulling up articles because, quite frankly, although he practiced as a neurologist for 42 years, he probably had only seen two or three cases of ALD because it's so rare. It's thought to be about 1 in 17,000 is the incidence. But so he was just getting, you know, the latest research treatment. And so we were very nervous that we were not going to remember all the questions we had, because we had kind of, with the help of my father, we had an understanding of what adrenal leukodystrophy was, but we had a lot of questions about, are there treatments? What is it? What are John's chances? So we made a little PowerPoint presentation, a little, you know, list of our questions so that we wouldn't forget to say, what about the boy in footnote 5? Is he still alive? You know, we wanted to know all sorts of stuff. And so poor Dr. Eichler, we got in there and he said, oh, okay, you know, this is not the usual discussion. Most of the time I get people come in and they're so confused and know this can't be, and they're very emotional. And not that we weren't emotional, but that we had very quickly realized that this was an opportunity to really get involved, and we wanted to make sure that we had decided John will survive this, and how can we shepherd him towards survival. We're super lucky because Dr. Eichler is one of those physicians who is open to all your questions and really speaks to us as equals and was happy to explain things and discuss potential treatments or potential disease paths. And so immediately we really had this sense of, you know, maybe this isn't going to be a tragedy. Maybe we can head this off at the pass. And, you know, he was very good. He told us all of our options. He set us up with all the right tests. You know, we immediately had an MRI for John to see what his cerebral involvement was. We were hooked up and we went to Children's Hospital and had the girls tested to see if they would be bone marrow compatible, because it's thought that siblings would be the best, most compatible match. And at the same time, that allowed us to find out if our girls were carriers. So I'm lucky to say that neither of my girls will pass on this genetic legacy that I had the unfortunate opportunity to do, and that they're both matches for their brother. So that was a huge moment where we could exhale just to say, okay, I don't know where this disease is going to go and take us, but we won't be scrambling so many people, unfortunately, don't have an in-family match. And so I urge anyone out there to consider joining a bone marrow registry, because it's not as scary a procedure as I think people romanticized in the 80s, but it's really, it can change someone's life. It can save their life.
Right. Robin, I know you had some questions about treatment. You want to take it?
Well, I think we've pretty much covered the treatment that exists currently. You mentioned that gene therapy is coming up, and that's, of course, really exciting. But what are the benefits and drawbacks of stem cell transplant at this point?
Sure. Well, the benefit of stem cell transplant, of gene therapy versus a bone, a regular bone marrow transplant, is that bone marrow transplants are not to be taken lightly. And so even though I would like to stomp my foot and say, oh, give John a bone marrow transplant now, just fix him. You know what would fix him? There are dangers with a bone marrow transplant. It's so taxing on the body to go through the rigorous chemo. You've got to blank the system before you can reboot it. And there's also, with a bone marrow transplant, there's the concern that there will be graft versus host disease, where the body does not accept the new cells, even if they're thought to be a match, and then the body will fight those cells and kill them, because that leaves you in a worse position than you started before.
Right. Let me just back up for a second, because I'm not sure that everybody understands about bone marrow transplants. So you mentioned it's almost like rebooting the system that we have to wipe out your own bone marrow, and they do that through chemotherapy. So they give you these harsh chemotherapy drugs to completely obliterate your own bone marrow, which takes your immune system also to zero, right?
Oh, yes. Zero. So something like a common cold could kill you.
Exactly. And then they transplant this new bone marrow into your system, and hopefully it takes hold and grows and repopulates your bone marrow. Have I got that right?
Yes, and it can take up to a year and sometimes beyond for someone's entire bone marrow and, for all your cells to be rebuilt using the new directions. A bone marrow transplant, takes time. There's all these risks. Not to say that there aren't, some of the same risks associated with a gene therapy, but gene therapy they blank out your system with chemo, and then instead of putting somebody else's hopefully well-matched bone marrow in, they've already taken a sample of your very own bone marrow, and they've modified it, and they've fixed the defective gene, so that they're putting your own bodily product, modified, back into your body to reboot your system. So the thought is, I know it sounds kind of very sci-fi, but it is happening with some success. And the thought is, it takes the delays of finding a match out of the equation. Mm-hmm. It takes the delay of graft versus host, because it's host versus host. It's there's no fighting. It's all you. And you still have to go through the hardship.
Which isn't to say it's easy, but yeah.
No. But it's two of those main concerns taken out of the equation. So you still also.
The concern is that the graft, the donor bone marrow, which is what's being grafted in, is going to be rejected by the host, by your body. So your body says, this is an invader. I want this out of
here. Fight it.
Right. And
right.
Conversely, the new bone marrow cells, the new immunity cells, can say, this whole body is really foreign and sick, and we have to go attack the thyroid gland and the skin and the... And so your new immune system may attack you.
Right.
Right. So this is a relatively high-risk procedure. And as you say, it can take up to a year of – and you spend most of that in the hospital or certainly in
I think it depends on how well you are. Many months are spent in the hospital. Many months are spent at home on restricted – originally we had talked about, we could we Skype his classes. We're always looking forward. We're always looking fine. Whatever hardship we get, we will succeed. So let's look ahead at the next step. But it's, we're lucky enough to be close to a transplant center like Boston. Whereas, some folks are not as lucky and they have to travel a distance and leave their family and leave their other children, or you bring the children and it's such a disruption.
Right.
And those are many reasons why they don't do bone marrow transplants until you show certain brain damage, because you would not take a quote unquote healthy child with an ALD gene and put them through this process.
Yeah, because we've talked about the risks, but let's talk now about the benefit. So why would somebody sign up for such a procedure? And it's because your system is off on the wrong foot and we're trying to get it straightened out. And one way is to reboot the system. So what's the upside of doing this?
Well, the upside is that if you can arrest the progression of the cerebral demyelination. So if you can have, if you can set the body back on the right track and hope that the body will stop pulling the cover off the brain or the spinal cord, then, you know, when that damage stops progressing, then you can live from there. Unfortunately, some people get a, you know, they get a transplant and it advances during the chemo because you can't even fight it once your body is, you know, once your immune system is shut down, the disease rapidly progresses. You're left with whatever damage has existed. I mean, unfortunately, right now, science does not have the ability to kind of fix that damage, to weave that cover over the brain, to remyelinate your nerves. So, you know, but it's worth it because without intervention, the disease leads to progressive disability and death. And
right.
So you're rolling the dice and taking a chance. I know many families that have said from their personal experience the transplant was as bad as the disease.
Mm.
And I know many families that say we had the transplant, it was caught early, and I have a normal boy. You know, he lives. ALD is in
right.
the rearview mirror. So
that's wonderful. Now,
yeah.
you alluded to it's a wonderful movie, and I'm sure it's only on VHS tape, but if anybody wants to watch it, I think you can order it from Netflix. You know, they have to send it to you in the mail. I don't think it's electronic.
Yes.
But
I think it's actually showing on Cinemax this month. So.
Oh, great. Yeah, so anyway, it's a family who refused to take no for an answer and did manage to concoct this special oil, which is like a health food supplement. It's not an approved drug or anything, but it does have some effect in slowing the process down. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so the Ordonez family, you know, their son Lorenzo was diagnosed with ALD. And the more they tried to understand about the disease and the kind of the metabolic issues that it presented and how very long chain fatty acids build up in the body, they started to play around with different oils, trying to see, basically you can either take in very long chain fatty acids and your body, and everyone, normal people, their body breaks it down. And normal people also, your body will use very long chain fatty acids for intracellular transport and for different kind of jobs. But also always with the fact that a regular person can break it down. People with the ALD gene are not able to break down these very long chain fatty acids. So the Ordonez had this stroke of genius where they thought, you know, they were working with Hugo Moser, just a champion of ALD, working at the Kennedy Krieger Institute at Johns Hopkins. They figured out that maybe you could trick the body into using smaller long-chain fatty acids that were not as dangerous and caustic to the body as VLCFAs. And so they came up with this. It's a concoction of derivatives of olive oil and rapeseed oil. It looks like Wesson with chunks of Crisco at the bottom. But which is pretty gross, but you know, my son takes a certain dose every morning along with a low fat diet, and no, it's not a surefire cure or preventive measure, but you know, I can say that in the 5 years he's been on it, his blood work has been very similar to that of someone who doesn't have ALD. So to me, that's an indicator that we're giving him a chance and doing something right. It's not a guarantee, and every 6 months we kind of hold our breath and think, is this when the other shoe drops? But we still are so blessed to have that chance. So it's available right now through the Compassionate Access Program of the FDA.
That's
and
great.
If anyone is interested in Lorenzo's oil, you know, I've been involved with an organization, ALD Connect. Our website is www.aldconnect.org. And you can find links to Bluebird Bio's study on gene therapy, to Lorenzo's oil, etc. Helpful videos, information, webinars. So there's other information out there.
And you said earlier, no matter where you are in this journey, there are other people who can hold your hand and connect with you and try to help you get on the most productive path.
Oh, yeah. I find there's such amazing camaraderie and support available through online communities. and in person. But, you know, for a rare disease, if you're thinking that only one in 17,000 has it, you may not find someone else in your town with this same disease. But I urge people to go out and connect with people through Facebook, through different, you know, the United Leukodystrophy Foundation, the ULF, www.ulf.org. They have many wonderful patient chat rooms where you can meet people and really discuss where you are in your journey of diagnostics, or what tests should you get, or what treatment, or what doctors, what specialists might be helpful to you. And even just knowing that you're not the only person and that there's someone who's further down the road and it's, you know, things are okay. I'm very careful to try to reach out to some of the newborn screening moms to say, hey, my son was diagnosed, you know, over 5 years ago and is fine. He is a boy. He's a boy who plays indoor soccer and basketball and has a black belt in karate.
Yeah, I saw we've got a picture of him getting his black belt on the website.
Yeah, he's just, you know, we're grateful to have the opportunity to be a boy and to pray and have faith that we will catch this in an early stage and have good treatment available to him. But, you know, I will say it's frustrating for me knowing that newborn screening technology is available, that it is not in all states. I don't think it should depend on what zip code you live in or what state to have a chance to live. And, you know, John, we found John because he's normally pale but was very tan. I don't think this diagnosis of this disease should belong to people who are white or light-skinned, who you would notice with this kind of very early symptom, or the fact that, you know, my father's a neurologist, and so I could get the answers for early symptoms as we walk that path of diagnosis.
Right, and we have no real track record yet of dealing with people who are diagnosed as newborns. And it could
exactly.
well be that by modifying their diet from the get-go, that this could be modified to good advantage.
Well, exactly. You know, it's not that I would ever hope that more people have ALD. I wouldn't wish this on really my worst enemy, conceivable enemy. But, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe the numbers are higher, but that maybe the chance of just having an ordinary life and not knowing about it, maybe getting the adult form of AMN and becoming symptomatic at middle age or when you're elderly. You know, when John was first diagnosed, the numbers were saying he probably had a 5% chance of being asymptomatic for both the cerebral and the adult AMN form. And so we thought, oh, 5%. Like, we cling to that 5%. But, you know, my hope is that newborn screening and giving more people the chance to get diagnosed early will allow that number to blossom and to grow and to find and to give them more chances. What a scientific advantage to be able to identify a population before they're symptomatic so that people can actually do research and find different preventive treatments that are just not conceivable when the only patients you're finding already have significant cerebral impairment.
Right. What comes to mind is PKU. All newborn babies now are tested for PKU. But it used to be before they did that babies with PKU didn't last very long. They died before their second or third birthday. And now when we identify it early and we modify their diets right from the beginning, people are living into adulthood with PKU. And so I know some people who walk around and look absolutely normal and who are still on a very modified PKU diet. So it could be that modifying the diet is going to make a huge benefit. And as you say, hopefully there are some drugs coming in the wings that will help with this as well.
Right. And, you know, that was one of ALD Connect's main projects in this past year was to roll out kind of a patient registry, because not only do we want to try and encourage our industry partners to work on finding cures to both ALD and AMN, but also, you know, if people have a stroke of genius and they have a great idea, they need to know where the patients are to test them and to see who's willing to participate in their own treatment, you know, who's willing to be part of a study. So we've been very fortunate with the help of PCORI funds to set up a patient registry that's available through our website if anyone's interested. But just to not only to encourage people to work on our dilemma, but also to empower patients to stand up and be counted and to say, we are a rare disease, but when we get together, there's a bunch of us, and it's worth the money, it's worth the time, it's worth the effort to treat us and give us a chance, because, you know, they have found that there's an exorbitant cost to late diagnosis and treatment, you know, not only in terms of broken dreams and lives, but also in just financial hardship, and that, you know, the cost of running a newborn screening program for this disease is just a slim percentage of what it costs to treat a late diagnosed boy, and they don't have good outcomes either. So all the numbers, all the personal reasons, it all makes sense pointing towards taking the time and spending a little money to give these boys a chance. And also, again, because it does treat the entire family, it does open up a whole new, you know, I know families that, you know, for years thought, oh, our whole family has this history of MS. It wasn't MS. It was ALD. Or, you know, they're being mistreated. They're taking medicines that will never help them.
Right. One of the keys to that is doing DNA testing. I think DNA testing really has not been widely available until just the last couple of years. So
yep.
If there are families out there who've had this kind of mysterious thing running in the family for years and years, this may be the time to go have a chat with a genetic counselor and see what kind of testing might be advisable. But
sure. Knowing that because it's X-linked and we can really, you know, they have a much better understanding now than they did, you know, years ago of how it's passed. Strategically testing one person may lead to the diagnosis of many.
Right. And so, again, X-linked means that it's more severe in boys than it would be in girls. Frequently it's asymptomatic in girls.
Right, but adult women will end up with the same and have the potential to end up with significant issues. So I will point out that they used to say, oh, females are just carriers, which makes me a little nutty. Like, we don't just have it in our pocket. But they're finding that if it's an issue for males because they only have one X chromosome, so whatever, you know, this ABCD1 transporter is broken, the same goes for women. It just takes a little longer sometimes for those symptoms to arise because they had one X chromosome that was written properly.
Right. There's one copy on each X chromosome. So girls have two X chromosomes, so they have two copies. If one of those isn't functioning properly, the other one is providing some function. Whereas boys only have one X chromosome, and if their gene is not functioning, then they don't have any at all.
Right, there's no backup. So that's why they get more severe symptoms or earlier symptoms. But it's important to note that there are many women out there that are being misdiagnosed, again, with some other related neurodegenerative disease. And they actually are ALD carriers. And I think they used to call us carriers. Now they call us ALD heterozygotes, which is even more opaque a term to those who are not well-versed in scientific lingo, but I think, you know, women with ALD and men, you know, my hope is that, you know, we'll be able to fix people. I mean, someday would they be able to fix people in utero? Or, you know, right now we have the reproductive technology to assist people to stop passing on this gene. You can select through IVF, you can end the family legacy of ALD. But, oh, how wonderful someday if we could actually fix
these genes, yeah.
Yep, fix it before it gets there. And then just take it out of circulation.
Right.
You know, there's a small percentage of people that are de novo mutations, so they have no family history of ALD or AMN. And just when the gene is put together before they're born, it's miscopied or mistranslated, and they end up with this mutation. It's possible even to have it without a family history. But that's, again, a very small percentage.
I hope that at least with the newborn screening that will become universal in all states so that hopefully we don't find many more people with it, but we find everybody who has it.
Exactly. Yes. Well, you know, we are very excited. In August of 2015, ALD passed muster with the Federal Review Board and was signed on, was added to the recommended universal screening panel on a federal level. And it was just recently on February 16th, 2016, Secretary Burwell of Health and Human Services finally signed it to the federal list. So that's what added it to the additional three states. I believe it's California, New Jersey, and Connecticut joined New York State, being the only four states in the country that test for ALD. My hope is that the other state will take this serious recommendation of the federal government into account and add it. I know that it's in the works. People are working on legislation in Florida. In Massachusetts, it has been introduced and failed twice, but we'll keep trying to pass it. We'll try to introduce it again. But really, it's a shame when you don't have a chance to get treatment because someone has decided they won't spend $2.50 to test your sample. It's just pretty inexcusable in a country that has as many resources as we do.
And surely the price is going to come down the more tests that are done.
Of course. And we're in a country of medical innovation and of all these geniuses that can actually treat it. My only request is that people give people a chance to be known and treated and to control their destiny and to really empower their families to know who is a carrier, what are their reproductive options, and what are their treatment options available to them. It's not beyond our reach. I think we're trending in a good direction, but there's still much more work to be done.
Well, we're fortunate to have people like you helping.
Oh, I'm just John's mom. I'm just a busybody who decided we could make a difference and we'll do as much to try and help our cause until, you know, we pray that he'll be in the 5%. But if he's not, then, you know, hopefully we will have done everything we could to have the community in a good shape when he needs the help, that it'll be there, and that working with ALD Connect has given me a lot of hope in that regard.
Great. So it sounds like John chose the right mom, and this community of parents. I'm sure there are other folks like you who are working very diligently to try to help their children survive. And finding one another, it gives you even more, as you said, more power, more hope. So we encourage anybody who is affected by ALD to reach out to these resources and find other folks and work together on it. It's a thorny problem, but there is progress being made, much slower than we wish it would, but there is progress. And early diagnosis is one of those key issues. So don't be shy to continue to find the right resources. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Oh, I was just going to say, and I'm also like honored and humbled to work towards this progress with many amazing, amazing parents who are doing this work in honor of their lost children. And so there are many organizations that ALD Connect works alongside, you know, Stop ALD, the Aidan Jack Seeger Foundation, Fight ALD. I mean, there are just many amazing family-run organizations that where they've decided to take their tragedy and really honor their children's memory by making sure or trying to ensure that no other family, no other boy has to suffer in that same way. So they're just amazing, amazing work done by people that really just transforming their grief and saving strangers' lives. It's just really a beautiful gift and, you know, in honor of their children.
One of the most poignant lines from the Lorenzo's Oil movie that has stayed with me is the parents have been working and they're seeing their child continue to degrade. And one of them says to the other at one point, did you ever think that maybe we're working to save someone else's child? And there is a lot to that. So as you said before, wherever you are in your journey, we need you to help.
Yes, I tell people, the experience is too expensive to waste.
Exactly.
So continue to work with this group. It's a great group, and hopefully we're going to succeed one day. So thank you very, very much, Kathleen, for being with us. And thanks, Robin, as always. And thanks to everybody for listening. And we hope that you'll be with us again next week. And meanwhile, be well and be a powerful patient. Take good care.